Stay tuned for To Your Health on WPVC LP Charlottesville, the show where food is on the table and center stage. To Your Health is brought to you by Hamilton's at First and Main, celebrating 20 years of sustainable fine dining on the downtown mall. Now here are your hosts, Larry Stopper and MC Blair.
Good morning, good morning. Welcome to Your Health. I'm MC Blair, my co-host Larry Stopper, here at the studios at WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. A little bit later on, we're going to be interviewing Matt Rohde of Carpe Donut. And right now, we're going to lead off with some headlines. What do you got, Larry?
Well, the first one I've got today is about gut health.
Gut health?
Yeah, pulled this out of the paper. All right, we all know about gut health, or we're learning these days about gut health, but the ins and outs of the microbiome these days are really still a mystery, certainly to the layperson, such as myself. So it was pretty interesting reading this article. All right, so we know that there are foods that promote good bacteria in your gut. Yogurt, kefir, cheese. These are good foods for us. But new research from the University of Illinois just came out this year that explains how diet can affect brain function. Their findings support the thinking that consistent intake of stomach-pleasing foods may have a beneficial effect on stress, anxiety, and depression, which is pretty cool.
That's absolutely true.
It really emphasizes that brain-body connection.
Yeah.
If you're not feeling good, if your stomach isn't right, the rest of you isn't right.
That's true.
But here's something that I really learned, really interesting. I didn't know that there was such a thing as prebiotic foods.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so probiotics, yogurt, kefir cheese, kombucha, other fermented foods. But this was completely new to me. Prebiotics. So I had to hunt this one up. And all right, so the definition of a prebiotic, it's a fertilizer for the good bacteria that's already there, and they're helping the good bacteria improve.
And stuff like that, right?
Well, so, yeah, exactly right. Yeah. So the prebiotics include oats, flaxseed, onions, bananas, greens. So you're eating those to help the bacteria in your stomach that's already there. Pretty cool stuff.
That is cool.
So
that helps the brain, I guess.
Yes,
right?
And yeah. It's helping the brain. It's dealing with stress and anxiety, helping depression, all sorts of interesting stuff.
Well, that's really neat.
Yeah, cool stuff. All right, and here's a fun one. Just to change it up here a little bit. The creator of the Big Mac has passed away.
Dun, dun.
And actually, I read just this morning that the creator of General Tso's Chicken has also passed away. So, and both at age 98.
Oh my!
So, two creators of iconic foods, for better or worse, passed away.
I'd love to find out what their diets were.
All right. So, the creator of the Big Mac was James Delegati, and he passed away at 98. So, you got to think the first thing that came to my mind when I was reading his obit was, that man did not eat a lot of his own Big Mac.
Probably not.
Yeah.
Probably not.
The Big Mac was introduced in 1967 in Uniontown, Pennsylvania, and in just 2 years, it accounted for 19% of McDonald's sales.
That's funny.
So there you go. I could still do the jingle. I can tell I've never eaten one in my life, but I can do that jingle. I watched that TV long enough to be able to.
I remember in my hometown of Annandale, Virginia, the first McDonald's came there, and they had a big sign out front that said over 100,000 sold. And so they've come a long way in that respect.
Yeah, you do remember when they had those signs out in front of all of them with the golden arches, and they all announced how many they had sold.
Yeah, yeah.
It's got a lot of zeros behind it now.
Actually, I have a fun fact I just want to throw, since we're sort of chuckling here. On Monday, England announced that the 5-pound note contained animal fat.
I saw the tallow.
Yeah, and it so infuriated the vegetarian community that they demanded a vegetarian alternative. And Scotland responded by declaring that their currency is 100% vegan. So I guess you could. I just thought that was so amusing.
I read that as well.
Really? Yeah. This is funny. You're listening to Your Health with me, MC Blair, and Larry Stopper here on WPVC 94.7.
All right. Well, here's the next one that I pulled off the paper. It's from the Washington Post, and the headline was, "Is nutritious food really pricier? And if so, is that really the problem?" So the question it posed is healthful food more expensive, and is cost what's standing between people and a better diet? All right, so here's the bottom line premise. We all need 2,000 calories a day, more or less. And if you look at the cost based just on the price per calorie, the answer is pretty simple. Nutrient-dense foods, fruits, vegetables, cost far more on average than your great empty sources of calories, refined grains, sugar, vegetable oil. There are ways to stretch the budget to eat healthfully and keep the price down if you have time and skill. That's the real emphasis.
Right.
So here's the breakdown. And again, this was really interesting stuff. Based on a per 100 calories, okay? So Kraft mac and cheese is 13 cents per 100 calories. A frozen burrito is 14 cents. Beef ravioli canned, 17 cents. And ramen instant noodles come in at the bottom, let's face it, 6 cents per 100 calories.
6 cents per calorie. Yep.
I mean, that's pretty darn low.
Supported many of a college student.
Yeah. but here's the flip side of it, is that there are really good foods for you that come in the same price range, starting at the bottom with your basic brown rice at 4 cents per 100 calories. Eggs at 10 cents, peanut butter at 7 cents, dried black beans at 10 cents.
Now, are these organic or?
No, they're not organic foods. These are just, these are prices straight off the grocery shelves.
Understand, yeah.
And the emphasis in the article was, can somebody eat healthfully and keep their budget at the approximate $4 per day that the supplemental nutritional blah, blah, blah SNAP program, basically the food stamp program, that's what they provide.
Right.
Can you eat healthfully at that level?
Yes.
And the answer is yes. But again, the emphasis is time and skill.
Exactly.
Things that are not particularly available to your general average.
Yeah. Now, one of the things
working that, person trying to make ends meet.
One of the things that I found, Larry, was that when I was a lot busier than I am now, trying to earn a living, I would take a Sunday. And most people do have Sundays off. I would take a Sunday and make many things that I could freeze out of locally grown, locally produced, pastured pork and poultry and organic veggies, and make those in advance, put them in the freezer, and then when I came home at, 6:30, 7 o'clock and needed the dinner, you just pull it right out of the freezer, throw it in the oven, and there it is. And now you've got fast food, if you will, readily available, and it's healthy at the same time.
Yeah, making food ahead of time. Again, it takes planning. It takes extra work.
It does.
Parents with kids, it's obviously not easy, but it is possible to do it.
It is.
It is possible to avoid the pre-made, high-fat.
Yeah, with a bunch of ingredients.
Poor nutritional stuff. All right, so I want to emphasize again, or I let you all know that you are listening to 94.7. This is Larry Stopper along with MC Blair, and we will soon bring in our pal Matt Rohde here to talk about other issues. But I've got another. This one really stuck with me because I admit it, I am a fan of tuna, real tuna.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
When I go to the restaurant and I can get some really good grilled tuna, I definitely run for it. So this was a fascinating study of tuna in the Gulf of Maine. And it revealed that the levels of methyl mercury in their bodies have decreased at a rate of 2% per year, or nearly 20% over the last decade. Good news.
That is good news
for those of us who like tuna, although I have to admit that even discussing the level of mercury in my food,
scary,
it makes me cringe. But okay, I don't eat a lot of it. It's too expensive to eat a lot of it. But it concentrates mercury. So tuna are apex predators.
Right.
And so they are concentrating the mercury that smaller fish are collecting through various and sundry means. That's obviously in the water. But here was the really interesting part of the study. The decline in mercury levels in the fish is almost exactly parallel with the decline of mercury emissions from coal-fired power plants and the decline of mercury in our air.
And that's interesting.
So it really appears that the fish are responding in real time. So today, as I was perusing the headlines prior to coming in, there's a headline in today's New York Times about how coal only wants a level playing field. They just want to compete on a level playing field. And I thought, well, that if that level playing field includes spewing all this stuff up into the air because that part's free,
right?
Then what's the level playing field that they're talking about?
I wonder what the cost of all those respiratory diseases, well, you know, from that, what does that cost? You add that in and all of a sudden it ain't free anymore.
Yeah. It's hard. It ends up hardly being free.
It's pretty damn
painful.
And one of the things that your last article brought up about the high cost of cheap food. There was a kid, he was like 11 years old. He did a TED talk, and he summed up the whole thing pretty well by saying, you can either pay your farmer now or pay your hospital later. And if you add up the copays and doctor bills that you won't have to pay by eating properly, you know, locally raised, in season, organic, sustainably grown food, it's actually cheaper.
Certainly, in the long run.
Yep, it really is. And at the end, you're still healthy, and you don't have all these infirmed and have these diseases. Theoretically, of course, you know, there are some people that are predisposed for certain diseases.
Right. You're not going to get away. Mortality is out there.
It is. We are going to die at some point.
And something is going to get us.
Right. But if I'm going to die, I'd rather be, you know, a friend of mine, Richard Collins, his mother passed, I believe it was 103 or 4, something like that. Yeah. And right up to the end, she was still cognizant and able to carry on a good conversation, which... To me, that's the way right there. And she died in her sleep.
Yeah, I'm going to see if I can arrange that.
Yeah.
All right. So I've gotten into the habit now of going to the Food and Drug Administration's website and checking on my favorite list, the recalls.
Yes.
We need to get some music for that.
This is good to know. So Trader Joe's hummus is now being recalled.
Oh, boy.
For Listeria monocytogens.
Oh my gosh, that was the same problem as the last week's hummus.
That's right. That was
hummus.
That was in the Sabra.
Sabra hummus.
So,
yeah.
I think we may start making
hummus
at home.
Make your own hummus.
It's not that hard.
Yeah, it's pretty easy.
All right, there's another one. Ultimate Body Tox, a dietary supplement for weight loss, and that one has been recalled for an unapproved new drug. CVS and Kids Relief for misdeclared belladonna. Now, what's belladonna? Fill me in. Do you know? I'm not really sure. I'll have to look that one up. I don't really know exactly what belladonna is. And the last one, this is my favorite, is Megajax, a male sex-enhancing dietary supplement as an unapproved new drug. So there you go. That's this week's recall list.
Can I swing in?
I'll go right ahead.
Yeah, go ahead, Matt.
Belladonna is a plant-derived.
Oh, okay.
It's actually used as a medicine.
Sometimes it's related to Datura, I believe. They used to drip it into their eyes in the Middle Ages because it will dilate your eyes super rapidly and make them look big and luminous. So it can be used as a medicine, but it's something you want to be very aware if you get a little belladonna into your food.
Okay, well, so there you go. That was in CVS and Kids Relief. Maybe, I don't know what the relief kind of counts for. All right, and my last good headline here, and I'll try to fit this one in before the break, was an interesting segment in the New York Times Well blog. And the question they posed was, why do I gain weight when I exercise and lose weight when I barely move? All right, so the problem most scientists agree is that exercise makes us want to eat. And many studies have shown that when people start a new exercise program, their bodies pump out many higher levels of various hormones that increase your appetite. And this reaction seems to be most pronounced in someone who starts a new moderate aerobic exercise routine. So that means most of us.
That's true. That's true. You're listening to Your Health right here on 94.7 WPBC with Larry Stopper and MC Blair.
And we are joined today by Matt Rohde. Matt will be coming in much more in the second segment here when we talk about sustainability. But I wanted to get back to this question of exercise here, because the basic conclusion of the study was exercise by itself is pretty useless way to lose weight. Just
true.
Doesn't work that way.
Gotta have that diet along
you
with
gotta
it.
Gotta have the diet. So studies show that people tend to move less, and actually this was an interesting fact. I'm sorry, I just got to this one on my page here, that people tend to move less on days when they exercise.
Interesting.
And scientists refer to this as compensatory inactivity.
Huh.
Yeah,
so,
there you
so
go.
So it's like if you exercise, then you figure, oh, done my movement for the day.
Then that's exactly right.
I'm quitting.
That's yeah. right. That's right. I got my 10,000 steps in or whatever, so I can now chill out. Okay,
wow.
So, I mean, basically it comes down to exactly what we have talked about in the past and what we'll talk about many times. The only way to really lose weight is to exercise and then scrupulously watch what you eat.
Absolutely.
Exercise and restricting calories. All right, so we're going to slide on off to a break here. You are listening to Your Health on WPVC with MC Blair, Larry Stopper, and we are back with Matt Rohde in just a moment.
Now back to MC Blair and Larry with To Your Health on 94.7 WPVC.
Hey, we're back. Hello, we're back. And with me, MC Blair, and Larry Stopper. Also, this segment, we're going to be bringing in Matt Rohde of Carpe Donut. Just a fantastic product, and he's been doing this for a while, folks. I'm sure you've recognized his trucks out there. And he's going to talk about that, and then we're going to get into sustainability. Matt,
well,
welcome.
Thank you very much, Mike. Thank you very much for having me, Larry. It's nice to be here, and particularly appreciate that you guys would invite me in on a day that you're talking about sustainability. Sustainability has definitely been part of our concept. I think it's a little arrogant to think that we have achieved sustainability, but that's definitely been our intent from early on. Can I have a moment for a shameless plug? Is that okay?
Oh, yeah, shameless plug.
So just as people are out driving around and getting geared up for the holidays, the Carpe Donut trucks are out in a couple places in town that are definitely worth considering. McGuffey Art Center's having their annual holiday open house. We've been doing that with them for 5 or 6 years now, and that is a really fun place to take kids and see some of your local artists and artisans at work. And the holiday market from City Market down off of Water Street is still running. It'll be going every Saturday through the 17th, and one of our carts is there today as well.
Excellent, excellent.
Right. And I, as long as we're in the shameless plug moment here, I want to throw another shameless plug in for the PVC program, Let There Be Light.
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic. I will be there Friday. I get there nice and early. Matt, his wife, is performing in one of the dance performances there that will be going on. It's a great time. So for those who have not enjoyed PVC's Let There Be Light, give it a try. You will like it.
Excellent.
All right. Now we can actually get to a subject involving To Your Health.
Yes, yes. giving folks the tools necessary to make healthy decisions in their daily lives. That's what we do.
That's our thrust here. So let me set the stage here if I can. We're talking about sustainability because we are approaching a world of 9.3 billion people. Currently, we have in the 7.2 range. Experts estimate that by the end of the century, it will be around 9.3. Obviously, those are serious guesstimates, but That's the number we're
operating. That's a lot of people.
It's a lot of people. We need a lot of food. The statistic that I pulled out that sort of blew my mind on it is that it's estimated that in the next 50 years, the global food system likely needs to produce as much food as it did in the previous 10,000 years combined.
Ooh.
So how do we do that and not destroy the planet simultaneously? It's a big question.
I think part of what people are kind of wrapping their heads around there as well is there's two stages. One is the sustainable food, agriculture and horticulture and ways that we can grow stuff, plants and animals. Can we continue to eat the way we want to? Carpe Donut was basically founded on this principle that we as a starting place, we shouldn't be asking everyone to live on brown rice and seaweed. That's not the way people eat. And food does have some values to us culturally and individually beyond just keeping our bodies alive. There's emotional components, there's connecting components. So something that could be sustainable in terms of the way the various ingredients get grown and made, but at the same time still resonates with people, and whether that's a Chipotle-style burrito, whether that's a Carpe Donut, I've always, from trying to establish a small business, I felt like that was a necessary interim step. I'm not sure at 9.2 billion people, we're not going to have to get a little bit more aggressive about how we change our relationship to how we grow our food.
Yeah. Well, there are people out there that, as a matter of fact, we'll have this fella in as a guest. He's got a system that's hydroponic, and it can be done in an apartment, or a rooftop, or a patio. It's fairly small, but you can plant 80 plants and provide a family of four with their produce indefinitely. So that part is covered.
Well, I thought it was fascinating, Larry, that you started the conversation, or maybe you were foreshadowing this conversation about sustainability, talking about the base costs of the food. Part of why all of our most effective agriculture, the American agriculture system, has moved to gigantic monoculture, to these farms that grow acres and acres and acres of one thing, is because it's really cost effective.
Extraordinary.
And that's why we have the Monsantos and the Cargills developing these seeds that need special chemicals in order to propagate. These are extremely productive, but they're also very destructive of the soil itself. Yeah. We are essentially strip mining our topsoil in a lot of parts of the world to get the yields that we're describing. And I think there is a whole, in the research I've been doing, there's a whole horticultural movement which says, rather than being willing to destroy or damage the ecosystems you grow the food in, you have to be building the soil, you have to be building biodiversity, you have to be protecting things like insect and bird species because they're part of the system by which you grow the food. Can it be as productive economically as an acre of Kansas corn? Potentially not, but that might be a false economy. That might just be pushing the costs down to our grandkids to say you're not going to have any soil to grow these things in anymore.
Yeah. Right, so I'm the pessimist around here, and I am happy to admit it, because I hear about the Joel Salatins. I know about this fellow that Mike has been describing working on this hydroponics, and I still can't wrap my head around how it actually gets done. I mean, right now, the world is losing 50,000 arable acres a year to desertification. Water loss, drought, cutting all the trees, as the Easter Islanders did, as we talked about prior to the show, turning life-giving places into lifeless places. Well, maybe not quite lifeless, but deserts. No longer able to sustain agriculture. We are draining aquifers. The Californians are draining their aquifers right now, digging their wells deeper and deeper to feed us right now. Those aquifers don't recharge. Not in the kind of drought that California is facing right now and all of the West is facing right now. The populations of Phoenix and Albuquerque, they grow and they grow and they grow. Where's the water coming from?
Well, and like the stripping of the topsoil to get these great yields agriculturally, they do recharge in the 1,000-year or 10,000-year timescale, not in the 10 and 20-year timescales that we would need them to sustain the kind of production in Central California that we're used to. I do also have to – I like your pessimism, Larry. I think that's the way to think about these problems. So the question that I have, though, is part of what would be necessary to make – substantive changes in the way the average American consumer or world consumer goes about eating are political changes. We have just gone through what can only be generously described as a revolutionary moment in our politics.
True.
And I've had a quiet moment, and I'm not making judgments about where we landed or how we got there, but I wonder how many of the voters that literally surprised our media system are the children and grandchildren of small-scale farmers that don't have jobs anymore, because we don't have very many small-scale farmers anymore.
Nope.
They all got bought out by Cargill and Monsanto. Sorry, guys, I'm going to keep calling you out for being the bad guys. And we don't have a diversified growing infrastructure in the same way we are fighting to try to hold on to our diversified plants and animals and ecosystems.
Actually, I was just reading about that this week. There was an article, I'm sorry, I keep referring to the Times because I read it fairly obsessively. And there was an interesting article in there by a child of the Iowa farms who now is a reporter for the Times, living in New York, but goes back to Iowa every year. And that's all he wrote about were the family farms of his youth and the gigantic corn-growing operations of his adulthood, just stretching for miles and miles and miles, and that there are very few small-scale farmers out there practicing sustainable agriculture.
That's true.
Instead, it's the monoculture that we see. And, of course, again, it is a revolution in our politics. That's a good example of it, because right now I think the statistic is 40% of the corn grown in this country goes to ethanol, which is sort of pointless.
It is. It's a one-to-one deal there.
But we're taking arable land and creating fuel.
Yeah, that's
well. And I wonder if Monsanto has planted the seeds of its own political dissolution by disenfranchising all the people who used to live on the land that they currently produce.
I think that's correct. And you're listening to Your Health here on 94.7 WPBC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, with me, MC Blair, Larry Stopper, and we're talking to Matt Rohde of Carpe Donut about sustainability, about feeding the world, you know, with the increased population coming around. And, of course, another way to do that is the small local grocery stores, you know, in a particular area, knowing the farmers and that sort of thing, and then knowing the people. And I believe that's one way of doing it, and of course through the local food hubs, which are springing up all over the country as we speak. There's over 200 right now, and they coordinate all the food from the local farmers, and then that's a distribution point for consumers to go and experience the not only the convenience but also the health benefits of eating real food.
I think you may be describing a bunch of different elements there, Mike, that would potentially be necessary to combine together to offset one very sad and simple fact, that Big Mac costs less per calorie than all of the elements that you just described, that a pre-made, pre-packaged box of cheesy crackers at the grocery store is the go-to place because it's inexpensive and people are looking at their food bill as the absolute bottom line.
And the immediacy as opposed to a long-term.
So it has to be about creating different venues in which to make those purchases where the direct price is not as critical as the whole experience of the buying or the relationships. Buying local is a concept that everybody loves and very few of us do beyond that first stage. I'm going to get one of my Christmas presents here and I'm going to buy the next 27 off of Amazon.
Right.
Is a very common pattern. And in food especially, price drives so many of our decisions.
It does.
It's hardwired into us. We're looking for bargains along the way.
Well, money is not an infinite product. Money is a very finite item in people's pockets.
Yeah.
As a rule, anyway, there are certainly exceptions.
In our family, we pooled our food budget and our medical budget. I'm referring back to Mike's quote earlier, we've been doing that for 15 years, saying we are going to look at our total expenditure in food dollars combined with our total expenditure in healthcare dollars, because that's the only way we could afford to eat the way we wanted to. And it was a gamble. It felt scary to do that. And as a small business person, to go many years without health insurance, because that was the only way we could make the biscuits and the gravy come out even.
Yeah.
I may mix my metaphors.
There you go. No problem.
You're listening to 2 Year Health here on WPVC. I'm Larry Stopper, Mike McBlair, my co-host, and Matt Rohde to my right here. And we are talking sustainability. So I wanted to get back to the big evil factory farms for just a second, because I see them in many ways as the immovable object.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree, Larry. And we had talked a little before we got started about a kind of a fringe movement that I've been doing a lot of reading about called distributivism. And the idea there is that all corporate entities, whether it's a gigantic factory farm or a seed company or a manufacturer, they just have such embedded advantages. Economics drives so many of our decision makings, especially when you think about us as large groups of people. Any of us can have a good day, go to our farmer's market and drop a bunch of money and do the right thing. But if you want the large masses of people to change their spending habits, you have to offset the embedded advantage of a giant multinational corporation.
And we'll also get government tax incentives.
Well, they get a lot of embedded advantages because they got the voice. You know, they've combined a lot of resources to be who they are. And distributivism is this other model that says the only way you counteract that is by microorganization. So if you get a group of neighbors together to make things in the maker movement, or you get a group of people together to support each other, growing even a portion of their own food, either whether it be hydroponically or through community gardens, these are movements that erode that monolithic power of the big corporation.
Yeah.
It's like on my wife's car, the bumper sticker with the school of little fish chasing off the big fish, and it says organize underneath it. And I think those are actually the social movements that have the potential to make sort of, you know, large-scale changes.
Absolutely. And speaking of schools, the school program, the school garden program, of course, on the Alice Waters schoolyard gardens. And then here at Charlottesville, we have the schoolyard gardens as well. And so that's teaching the young folks that they can garden, that the food tastes better, and then it goes into the school lunch program, and so they're getting at least a couple of their offerings that they're growing there, you know, to be healthy, and they're getting that advantage. So
maybe that's potentially teaching them a lesson, too, that to be productive in that way, it actually requires coordinating and cooperating and working as a team, as a community, come out with an outcome.
Yeah.
When they go and harvest all that food at the end of the year, at the end of the semester, they're suddenly feeling like, hey, we did this.
Yeah, exactly.
That is the only thing I think that stands up to the cost of a can of Chef Boyardee ravioli is going to be a big pile of fresh produce that you made and enjoyed the process.
Absolutely. And go back, the Alice Waters program is Edible Schoolyards. Schoolyard Garden is the Charlottesville program that they're doing.
All right, so I still, though, am the pessimist, and I'm going to keep I keep going back to this because I read this and I can't see how it comes out at the other end. Right now, there's a big political movement, these populist movements all over Europe. Everybody's certainly here too, but in Europe right now, there's a right wing campaign on in Italy. And it is anti-immigrant to the max. So where are the immigrants coming from in Italy that are freaking them out? They are not Syrians. They are Africans. They are economic and resource migrants. They are leaving their homes because there is are no resources for them. There's not enough land. There's not enough food to feed their families. We are conquering disease left and right. It is expanding population. It is bringing more healthy people into the world. But we're not bringing enough food. We aren't expanding the resource base. When you look over at Africa and you see the Boko Harams and the Lord's Resistance Army and all of these various groups, what they're fighting over are resources. There aren't enough resources. People migrate to where they may be able to make a living. And
Well, Larry, wouldn't you say that the primary resource, those wars that you're talking about in Africa are water wars? The resource that's going to be the most critical limiting factor in the production of food is going to be water.
Absolutely.
And that's, and that's what I think you are describing there.
Yeah.
And that is inevitably going to be, I mean, I understand the pessimism 100%. Could I offer you one idea that is potentially as as counteractant to those limitations?
Yes, I'm ready.
Anything else? You ready?
As soon as we come back. Folks, as soon as we come back, we're going to get that idea from Matt, and you are listening to To Your Health here on WPBC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Back after this.
We now return to Your Health with MC Blair and Larry Stopper.
Hello, we're back. We're back here at To Your Health, WPBC 94.7. We're brought to you in part by Hamilton's at First and Main. Boy, I'll tell you, you got to get down there. It's a great... great place to eat, wonderful food, properly prepared, and they do have featured local sustainably raised produce and certain meats. So get on down to Hamilton's at First and Main. And we're talking with Matt Rohde, who's going to give us an idea.
Oh, boy, I kind of set myself up to come up with something pretty good, because Larry's pessimism, I felt like I do have an idea here. You're not going to like it. It's going to seem very prosaic when I put it out there, but give me just a moment here. My idea is that we're going to solve or counteract the problems that are leading us down this cul-de-sac of unsustainability. And the big revolutionary change is going to be YouTube.
YouTube.
The idea that we can share complex techniques. I'm going to bring us all the way back to the thing you said at the beginning, Larry. You can feed yourself right off a grocery store shelf healthily instead of going down the prepared food path. The problems are time and technique or knowledge base. Yes. I can't fix the time problem, but that's only half the equation. And what I've discovered in my own life and what I think is going to be the big story over the next 50 years is people try to develop different economic systems, different agricultural and horticultural systems, is that we don't all need to be experts. We have in our pockets, on our smartphones, access to the expertise of the world. I had my my beloved clothes dryer break down about 3 months ago. I am not the guy who can just call the repairman or run down to Lowe's and buy a new dryer.
Right.
In less than an hour on YouTube, I was able to diagnose the problem, find out where to buy this very esoteric rear bearing part off Amazon. 2 days later, it arrives, and I watched a YouTube video, and I repair a $600 dryer, and I am not any kind of mechanical genius because I was harnessing that knowledge base. Now, I will also say, I cannot grow food to save my life. I can cook it. I can fix stuff, I can do other things, but I'm not going to be your neighborhood farmer. Except if I had one of the great farmers of the world telling me how to set up my raised beds, do my hydroponic table, do whatever it's going to be, I believe that I could be successful at that. And the ability to spread that kind of knowledge freely, cross-culturally, in any language, instantaneously, and for free, that is our greatest hope, I think, in trying to close the loop back towards sustainability.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Did that make really you feel does. A little more optimistic, no, Larry?
It actually does, because I had the same experience in repairing my sink. God bless YouTube. I watched that video 4 or 5 times and then went and fixed my sink for a fraction. No plumber, no nothing. So,
no, and I think it's YouTube's the example. This is the first version of this, but we're in the information age. Absolutely. This is the information revolution, and that's what we need to harness to overcome the faults and destructiveness of our previous revolution, which was an industrial one. So that bringing people together, giving them the tools to fix some of these problems at the local micro scale, to me is the best and most hopeful idea for trying to come up with a true alternative.
And I think you're right.
And I think it's also people pushing back against the industrial model. The industrial model dominates our politics because they have the money to dominate our politics. But they don't have people power by any means. And so when I look at it try to look at it from an optimistic point of view rather than just being Mr. Pessimist, I look at people power. And I think that people power over the long term, because we are hardwired for survival, are going to figure out ways to do this when we have to. We're going to wait until we have to. But when we have to, we're going to come up with ways to, I think, deal with the issue.
I think you're right. And the one thing that I find it's common sense, and it's certainly a good answer, and that is that if the listeners out there get more education to things like real food. By the way, the definition of real food I saw the other day was pretty good. It said, instead of a list of ingredients, real food is the ingredient. So that real food doesn't have a list of ingredients. It's pretty cool. Getting back to your people power, if the people become educated and they stop buying the stuff that makes them sick, then the corporations will be forced to change. Because if you don't buy their stuff, they don't make money. And stockholders don't make money. And if the stockholders ain't happy, nobody's happy. And they're only going to be happy when the stuff gets bought. So if the big corporations if people in mass become educated and stop buying that stuff, then they'll change. They have to.
It's going to be a long process, and it's probably going to be a lot of different pushes from a lot
Absolutely.
Of different directions to do that. It's funny you talked about real food, because we put real food donuts on our grocery packaging 7 years ago. We first started selling them in the grocery stores, and I didn't have a definition for it. It was just my own way of describing what we were trying to do. No polysyllables in our ingredient list, just things that people would be able to understand kind of intuitively. Yeah. But I do think that to also acknowledge that where the pessimism comes from, we all know how the business of this works. There is a reality behind how people make these decisions. It is encouraging to see companies like Costco that are making a great run by putting a lot of organic product on the shelf.
Mm.
You know, who are the friends of this movement within the business community? The simple fact that Trader Joe's is in the news because they got one of their products had a problem. They're also one of those companies that puts an awful lot of organic and naturally grown food in front of people as a choice. They wouldn't do it if it didn't make them money.
No, that's true. That's very true. It's really funny. We keep talking about how fake food makes you sick. You know, fast food. What is it? There was a show I saw where he announced the name of a place, which I won't announce right here, but he announced the name and he said, technically it's food. So it was one of the well-known fast food places. But I wanted to touch briefly on food as medicine, which
right.
a lot of folks don't know about. But this gal, Dr. Terry Walls, and she's an MD, had late-stage secondary progressive MS. She was given a fairly short time to live. She had been through chemo. She was under therapy through the Cleveland Clinic, which is a cutting-edge clinic in the nation. And she was suggested by a friend to take all these supplements. So she started taking these supplements. And it actually slowed the progression. So being a scientist, she said, well, heck, what if I go back to the food where these supplements were plucked and get the whole matrix? I wonder if that helps. Well, 18 months later, she was symptom-free, and this particular MS is not the one that goes into remission. People were really amazed that that happened. She did it through diet. And as she said, she eats a wide variety of fruits and vegetables and grass-fed beef, including red, blue, purple, yellow, and green fruits and vegetables. You gradually increase the number of servings per day to at least 9 cups of vegetables and fruits, along with about 4 ounces of grass-fed beef or pastured pork or poultry. 3 cups should be dark greens, spinach, Swiss chard, kale, mustard greens, and cruciferous, cabbage, kale, collards, broccoli. And 3 cups should be intensely colored fruits and vegetables, red, orange, blue, blueberries, strawberries, red and yellow peppers. And 3 cups should be from others. So it's a total of 9 cups of fruits and vegetables plus 4 ounces of grass-fed beef per day. And she stopped these symptoms. She's holding trials right now out in Iowa and getting amazing results from the autoimmune diseases, stopping those symptoms. And it's all going down to taking care of your mitochondria, which is the energy engine, if you will, or distribution point for each cell. And so if your mitochondria is healthy, your cell is healthy, your immune system is healthy, and these diseases that we either get from outside sources that come into everybody's body at one time or another are shut down by their immune system because it's healthy. And it's all done through diet and real food. So that's, to me, is just amazing.
Well, can I give you a personal anecdote? Because I'm a huge believer in that.
Well. Yeah. Although I'm going to interrupt you just for a second, make you wait, and let everybody know that you're listening to WPVC, the Progressive Voice of Charlottesville. I'm Larry Stopper, and my co-host, Mike McBlair.
And we're brought to you in part by Hamilton's.
We are, and we are talking with Matt Rohde, who now has something to offer.
All right. So this, we're three old guys here. I mean, let the record show. I have been struggling with what I'll call old man ailments for a little while here. And the most recent and ridiculous one has been plantar fasciitis in my right foot, which is like a screaming pain in your heel that does not go away for months. And I tried everything. I had the massage therapy. I had special shoes. I was putting the brace on at night, and absolutely nothing was working. And I work on my feet all the time. And in literally desperation, I started taking 1,000 milligrams of turmeric morning and night.
Great.
Within 48 hours, I was absolutely pain-free. And if I don't take it, it is a huge anti-inflammatory. And this is an inflammatory injury or an inflammatory ailment. And inflammation is one of those, we're only getting to start. It's like the gut health. We're only getting to start understanding what inflammation is, how it works, and how to counteract it, and how pervasive are all kinds of health ailments can be really driven by inflammation. And in this case, it was very localized, very obvious. And the cause-effect relationship between me taking a couple of turmeric capsules and not being in pain while I go about my day is a very, very strong one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I had a situation or through my story, you know, after you turn 50, they recommend you get colonoscopies. Well, I always had polyps, and they were benign, and they would always snip them and go on and say, come back in 3 years. And so I did, and always had those. Well, my doctor told me to start cutting back on my red meat. Well, this is about the same time that I learned about real food and pasture-raised pork and poultry and grass-fed beef. And I'm a beef eater, I'll tell you that. So I continued my red meat intake, but this time it was grass-fed beef. And I did that over the next 4 years, went back to get a colonoscopy, and my doc said, gee, you're clean as a whistle, no polyps. Now, is that empirical data? It is for me, but that it absolutely works.
Well, and I'll throw in my story, although it's not food-based, it was sciatica. I was working very physical labor into my early 40s and developed painful sciatica. And for those who've had sciatica, everybody out there is nodding their head going, oh, man. So I went to the chiropractor, and he said, oh, I'll fix you up, no problem, but I need 16 visits. To which I replied, do I look like an ATM to you? I don't have the money for 16 visits. And I went to a yoga teacher, explained to her what I had learned through research about sciatica, that it's essentially a pinched nerve. We developed a program, yoga program, to stretch out my spine. The sciatica went away in about a month of very intensive yoga, every single day, 40 minutes a day, no excuses. No missing a day. Didn't matter what I had that day. If I had to get up at dawn to do it, I did it. If I had to do it before I went to bed, I did it. But 40 minutes a day, and in a month it was gone. Never been back.
Wow.
So it is possible to self-cure or to find food as medicine here, as we're talking about, to really shake things up in our body. It does not necessarily require some compound that's been invented at I don't know what Bell Labs or or whoever invents all these various and such.
Mostly Merck, I think. Mostly Merck.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I know, right. I really. That's an aspect of the culture that I am really unfamiliar with. I don't take any pills, and I'm much happier for it.
Wow.
We're listening to old guys talking about their ailments on WPVC, the Progressive Voice of Charlottesville.
And To Your Health. Hey, I just wanted to, just say that our pets are important to us. And there's many, many studies showing that people that maintain pets, either cats or dogs or any sort of pet, feel better and less stress. And so I found out that we have cats. We found out that cats are obligate carnivores. They're not supposed to eat anything but meat or the occasional grass for their fiber. And so I started chopping up stew beef and adding about 25% chicken liver, beef liver combination for their taurine. And our cats are so healthy. Their fur is totally silky smooth, and we have a 16-year-old cat that acts like a kitten. So it works, folks. It really does. That's something you can do for your cats, and I average the cost out. It's not much more than dry food and canned food, so it's pretty good stuff.
All right. Well, I think we have about reached the end of our hour tonight. Want to thank Matt Rohde for coming in and joining us again. Always a voice of reason and optimism, which is always needed around my pessimism. Enjoy the day today, everybody.
Everybody, and this is MC Blair saying thanks for joining us on To Your Health, brought to you by Hamilton's First in Maine.
Bye-bye.
Your Health with your hosts Larry Stopper and MC Blair. To Your Health is brought to you by Hamilton's at First in Maine, celebrating 20 years of sustainable fine dining on the downtown mall. Be listening again next Saturday at 11 for To Your Health. The show is produced by Ben Chambers, production assistance from Mike Friend.